Broadcast live. Studio A. Global Media News. SUNY Old Westbury College Campus in Old Westbury, New York.
This is New Media Beat on OWWR Old Westbury. I'm Samantha Stock.
And I'm Hannah Rodriguez. We have lots of media news from all over the globe.
From Japan.
We have news about Toho, the Japanese entertainment giant that spawned Godzilla in 1954.
We have more news from Japan.
Are Japanese consumers being cheated by fake websites? Can these Japanese governments protect consumers from online scams?
From Brazil.
The Brazilian government is cracking down on internet gambling. How big of a problem is internet gambling in Brazil? Is gambling an addiction crisis? Can online gambling be blocked by the government?
From Nigeria.
We have internet news, esports is taking off in Africa. Why is online gambling booming in Nigeria? What makes Nigeria a leader in African esports? What about the online gambling market in other African nations?
From Russia.
Why do drone factories in Russia have social media accounts? What would a drone factory post about? Why are platforms blocking these accounts? Is this about the war in Ukraine?
From the world of journalism.
Do male journalists make more money than female journalists doing the same work? How big is the gender pay gap in global journalism? Are female reporters paid as much as their male colleagues? Why not?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
New Media Beat reporter Ethan Ford has a report about one of the biggest entertainment corporations in Japan, Toho. Have you heard of Toho? Have you heard of Godzilla? Did you know that November 1st was Godzilla's 70th birthday? The first film featuring Godzilla was released on November 1st, 1954. Godzilla is still a movie star in 2024. There is a new Godzilla flick in theaters brought to you by Toho. Toho created Godzilla in 1954 and is re-releasing the monster into theaters in 2024. Toho is a giant of the Japanese entertainment industry. Even bigger than Godzilla, Ethan, tell us about Toho. What is the news about Toho that attracted your attention?
Toho is one of the big four media giants in Japan. They're a studio that's been around forever and even worked with Akira Kurosawa. Domestically, they distribute a lot of Hayao Miyazaki's work. He's responsible for Studio Ghibli and one of the most famous anime films ever made, Spirited Away. Recently, they've acquired G-Kids, the North American distributor, and they've recently, that was responsible for the distribution of Miyazaki's work and many others abroad.
What is Toho? What is G-Kids?
Well, Toho is the studio that made Godzilla, and G-Kids is the distributor for, as I said, you know, a lot of Miyazaki's work, but they also distribute other, you know, anime works from Japan into the North American market.
What is Toho's angle? What is their reason for going through this?
The clear angle is to take control on both fronts and be the sole distributor for Miyazaki's award-winning works. But the other clear angle is to profit from the Japanese film industry as an export.
Why is the U.S. market so important to Japan?
Well, it's how the industry makes money. Since domestically there aren't nearly as many theaters and profits for films are incomparable to what films make in the U.S. box office. There are currently 3,653 movie screens across all of Japan, compared to the United States and Canada's 43,650 as of last year, to quote Statista. In order for a company to survive in a market like that, they would need, to quote Statista again, a strong interest in expanding their international operations.
How does the Japanese film industry work?
Well, back in the 50s, Japan enjoyed the golden age of Japanese cinema, according to Statista as well. And it was during this time where Akira Kurosawa, arguably one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, worked with Toho. A while after, in the 90s, though, the golden age, well, was tarnished, and the industry took a dip as the country's recession at this time. Eventually, in recent years, though, new life would be breathed into this industry once more with the introduction of streaming services. As streaming services like Netflix license and subtitle domestically produced Japanese television series like Terrace House and Midnight Diner, they became hits overseas, demonstrating that there was a much larger English-speaking audience hungry for Japanese content.
How does this relate back to the Cool Japan strategy?
Well, So quote not only my previous article, but also the Japanese cabinet. Cool Japan consists of Japanese culture and products like animation, manga, characters, and games. Although more specifically, the focus is on media exports like anime and manga. Japan aims to see their numbers overseas reach 20 trillion yen in the next decade. I know I just paraphrased myself there, but this is very important. The actions Toho are currently taking will be one of the first looks we'll get at this revised strategy in action. If successful, as I mentioned in my previous article, we could see groundbreaking changes in Japan's media industry. For New Media Beat, I'm Ethan Ford. Back to you, Hannah.
Thanks, Ethan. Let's talk about the internet in Japan. E-commerce is a giant part of the global internet, and especially in Japan, which is one of the most connected nations on the planet. Internet scams are a big problem in Japan. My co-host Samantha Stock is here to tell us about what the Japanese government is doing to protect consumers from online shopping scams. Can a government protect its citizens from being fooled by fraudulent websites? Samantha, what kind of scams are we talking about?
There has been an ongoing issue in Japan where false products are being advertised online and all over social media platforms. As online shopping becomes more popular each year, the amount of counterfeit products increases. These counterfeit products consist of both expensive and luxury items as well as cheaper everyday use items. In Japan, this problem has become prevalent and is not only affecting the individuals buying the products, but also the authorities.
Why is this happening in Japan?
Statistics on Japan's time spent online states that the number of people shopping online in Japan is growing and is estimated to reach 93.9 million by 2029. This is happening so much in Japan because of the fact that so many individuals are now shopping online rather than in stores. Besides this, it's extremely hard for many individuals to be able to tell which websites to trust, which products look real or fake, and more. Social media also plays a huge role in this issue between fake sites using brand logos to make money. All day as individuals scroll on their phones, we are glancing past these advertisements to buy these counterfeit products as we don't know any better. As stated in an article, as of June, consumer protection centers across Japan have received 134 complaints related to these fake sites, with total report losses amounting to roughly $1.1 million.
What social media platforms are promoting these false products?
So there are many different social media platforms being used to promote these products. Some of these platforms include Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Line. Line is a messaging app used in Japan, which is being used by friends and family who are sending these products to each other, not even knowing that they're fake. Besides that, the rise of influencers that are working for platforms such as Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram, they're affecting the amount of people purchasing these products as they're continuously advertising them.
What is the Japanese government doing to try to solve this issue?
The Japanese government has been taking several steps to try and put an end to the sale of counterfeit products online. The Consumer Affairs Agency and the Japan Patent Office are both working diligently to try and bring attention to the ongoing issues of counterfeit products being sold in Japan. The Consumer Affairs Agency was established in Japan as a way to help and protect consumers. This agency took care of things like product safety regulations, consumer complaints, and ways to make sure businesses were not selling these products. The Japan Patent Office, also a government agency in Japan, which is helpful as it protects businesses as well as inventors in making sure that no one uses or copies ideas or designs.
What can we as consumers do to protect ourselves and ensure that we are not buying false products?
It is important as consumers that we educate ourselves on this issue and are extremely careful with where we are purchasing our products from. Although you may think a platform is safe because you or someone has used it multiple times before, it still may not be safe. Next, individuals should make sure to be using official brand websites and known retailers. Lastly, which is pretty obvious, but we all have probably fallen for it before, do not buy something when you see the price is way too low because most likely it is a scam or a false product. For New Media B, I'm Samantha Stock. Back to you, Hannah.
Thank you, Samantha. Does Brazil have a gambling problem? When does gambling stop being fun and start being a social problem? Take a gamble and stay with us for more media from Brazil.
Thank you.
my co-host, Hannah Rodriguez, has a report for us about online betting in Brazil. Many Brazilians are gambling online. Internet gambling is a very profitable industry in Brazil. Some Brazilians are concerned that this can lead to gambling addiction and financial problems for individuals and the Brazilian economy. Hannah, how big an issue is this in Brazil? What kind of gambling are we talking about? Do a lot of Brazilians gamble on the internet?
Brazil is cracking down on online betting. There has been challenges with
How many Brazilians are gambling online? Is it a big problem?
It is a big problem since many are facing serious mental and financial consequences.
Why is online betting in Brazil being regulated?
Online betting is being regulated due to various issues regarding addiction, social, and economic effects. The government has been under increasing pressure to regulate the growing online gambling market. These sites with millions of visits, according to Semrush, are Bet365, Betfair, and Betano. While they're easily accessible, they lack consumer protection and have a large economic impact.
What challenges were these Brazilians facing when gambling online?
Challenges Brazilians have faced when gambling online includes fraud and rising addiction rates. According to the source AP, psychiatrists have reported an increase in gambling addiction, while banks have noted a rise in related expenses. The easy access of these online platforms allow individuals to gamble from the comfort of their homes, making it easier for them to engage frequently and develop addictive behaviors.
What specific measures is Brazil implementing to block online gambling?
Some specific measures Brazil's government is implementing to address these issues include authorities beginning to enforce a law signed by President Lula and the federal government. The law states that these betting companies must show a commitment with the new legislation and must follow federal rules to prevent fraud, money laundering, and misleading ads to stay in business. For New Media B, I am Hannah Rodriguez. Back to you, Samantha.
Thanks, Hannah. Let's talk about media in Nigeria with Frank Whitenack. Online gambling is attracting more and more players around the world. Africa is a growing market for the global game industry. One part of internet gaming is esports. Esports teams and tournaments are getting more and more popular. Nigeria is the nation in Africa that is leading the esports wave. Why Nigeria? What is happening in Nigeria that is attracting so many players to esports? Which African nations are most involved in esports? Is it just Nigeria? Frank, let's start with a basic question. Can you explain esports for us? What is it?
Esports, or electronic sports, is essentially competitive video gaming at a professional level. It's a form of organized competition where players or teams go head-to-head in video games, ranging from popular titles like League of Legends, Dota 2, Counter-Strike, Fortnite, and Overwatch. What's fascinating is that it's structured similarly to traditional sports. You have leagues, tournaments, and rankings, plus big-name teams and players that fans can follow. And just like in sports, there are analysts, coaches, and even dedicated training regimens. A huge draw is that anyone can participate at an amateur level, but only a few can reach the pros. Esports also thrives on streaming platforms like Twitch and YouTube, where fans can watch live matches, follow their favorite players, and interact with the community. Then there's the scale of it. The global esports industry has grown to the point where prize pools in major tournaments reach millions of dollars, and viewership numbers often rival traditional sports. The cultural impact is undeniable, too. Esports has created new types of celebrities, even influencing things like fashion, lifestyle, and social media trends. So if you think of esports as a parallel to traditional sports, it's like football or basketball, but for a digital generation. It's this massive, dynamic industry that has become a big part of modern entertainment, especially for younger audiences.
Which African nations are leading the way?
Many African nations have recently gotten their foot into esports. In specific, Nigeria has one of Africa's largest youth populations with a median age of about 18, and many young Nigerians are interested in gaming and digital media. High engagement on social media platforms also facilitates the sharing of gaming content, which help grow local gaming communities. Popular gaming titles like FIFA, PUBG, and Call of Duty are driving the demand for competitive events, with young Nigerians both playing and streaming these games. This creates a strong community basis for the competitive gaming scene.
Why are esports taking off in some African nations and not others?
Esports have gained traction in certain African nations more than others due to a combination of economic, technological, social, and infrastructural factors. High-speed internet is essential for competitive online gaming, which many esports rely on. Countries like Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, and Egypt have comparatively better internet infrastructure, enabling low-latency gaming experiences. In nations with underdeveloped internet infrastructure or high data costs, esports face challenges. Limited internet access and high prices hinder the ability of gamers to connect, compete, and stream content efficiently. Some African governments and private companies actively support the gaming and esports industry, seeing its economic potential and appeal among youth.
Is there African game developers and studios creating content?
Yeah, Africa is home to a growing number of talented game developers and studios producing unique games that draw on the continent's diverse cultures, stories, and landscapes. While the African gaming industry is relatively young compared to other regions, it has gained momentum in recent years with developers emerging across countries like South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, Uganda, and Egypt. Kairos Games, known for Ouran, Legacy for the Kori Odan, an action RPG inspired by African folklore and mythology. Kairos Games is one of Africa's pioneering game studios, often celebrated for its efforts to create African-themed content for global audiences. Leti Arts, founded by Ariam Tawai and Wesley Karenya, Leti Arts develops games that celebrate African heroes and folklore. Their African Legends series features African superheroes and traditional mythology, aiming to redefine how Africa is portrayed in media. For New Media Beat, I am Frank Whitenack. Back to you, Samantha.
Thank you, Frank.
OOWWR. Studio A. Global Media News.
We have social media news from Russia. The Russian war in Ukraine continues. Nations at war use propaganda and disinformation to shape public opinion. Social media has become a weapon of psychological warfare. Western social media platforms have started to block or deplatform accounts that are alleged to have been used to spread Russian disinformation and propaganda. Jaden Nunez has a report for New Media Beat about the banning of the accounts of the Russian drone factory. Drones are a very important military technology in the war in Ukraine. Jaden, why does a drone factory have social media accounts, and what are they posting that was so controversial that it led to these accounts being blocked?
So, according to reports from the UNN, the content uploaded by the Russian drone factory's social media accounts was crafted to recruit young women, primarily from Africa, with promises of a life-changing opportunity in Russia. These accounts posted videos that advertise and offer a free plane ticket to Russia and a monthly salary of $50. This recruitment program called Alabuga Start was promoted as a work-study opportunity in fields like hospitality and catering, giving it an appealing, legitimate front. But the reality for those who accepted this offer turned out to be far from what they were promised. Once these women arrived in Russia, many found themselves in situations that did not align with the advertised job roles. Instead, the expected training in hospitality or catering, they were reported places in situations with ties to drone mount manufacturing or related work for a factory producing drones that have been connected to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine.
Who is involved in blocking the Russian drone factory accounts?
The major tech companies involved in banning Russian drone factories are YouTube, Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, and TikTok. Each of these platforms took action independently, reviewing the accounts and content linked to the Russian drone factories to ensure they complied with both community guidelines and international sanctions. These tech giants removed all accounts and content associated to the Russian drone factories due to violations of their policies. Each company responded to the recent bans. In a statement, YouTube said its parent company, Google, is committed to sanctions and trade compliance. And after review and consistent with our policies, we terminated channels associated with Alabuga Special Economic Zone. Meta said it removed accounts on Facebook and Instagram that violated our policies. The company said it was committed to complying with sanctions laws and said it recognized that human exploitation is a serious problem. It said it had teams dedicated to anti-trafficking efforts and aimed to remove those seeking to abuse its platforms. TikTok said it removed videos and accounts which violated its community guidelines, which stated it does not allow content that is used for the recruitment of victims, coordination of their transport, and the exploitation using force, fraud, or deception. For New Media Beat, my name is Jaden Nunez.
Thank you, Jaden.
Kelvin Ventura is here to talk about Portugal and its ban on the Chinese technology company Huawei. The center-right New Portuguese government maintains the ban on Chinese 5G equipment on telecom corporations due to a cybersecurity risk. Kelvin, can you tell us about Huawei? What is Huawei?
Huawei is a Chinese company that provides 5G and 4G technology around the world.
What is the Portuguese government's ban of Huawei's 5G equipment?
The ban restricts technology companies like Huawei and ZTE from giving 5G and 4G network components in Portugal. The new Minister of Infrastructure and Houses of Portugal, Miguel Pinto Luz, part of the center-right government that took power in April 2024, will keep the ban on Huawei. The government banned on Huawei because of cybersecurity risks.
Why did the Portuguese government ban the use of Chinese 5G equipment in governmental offices?
Despite that Huawei is a private manufacturer, it is a Chinese company, which means it could serve as a backdoor to access sensitive information by the Chinese government. Portuguese government banned Huawei because Chinese involvement in critical infrastructure could compromise national security and sensitive data. The purpose of the ban is to keep the Portuguese data secure by keeping Chinese 5G and 4G equipment out of the telecom company. Macau News published that Portuguese telecom company has accepted the ban and they will not use equipment given by Huawei, even though the approach of Portugal was stricter compared to other countries. Portugal is not alone on the ban of Chinese 5G equipment.
So is Portugal the only country to ban Huawei?
Portugal is not the only country to ban Huawei. Several countries around the world have banned or implemented similar restrictions on Chinese 5G equipment because of cybersecurity risks. In 2023, Sweden banned and removed equipment in its network. In July 2020, UK joined the ban on Huawei because of security concerns. 11 European countries has imposed a restriction or ban Huawei and ZTE. Germany has decided to phase out components from Chinese manufacturer from his 5G mobile network by 2026. For New Media B, back to you, Journalism.
Thanks, Kelvin.
Let's talk about pay equity for the journalists around the world. Sophia Triadavopoulos is in the Studio A today to talk about the equal pay for journalists and media professionals. How big is the gap? Is it global? Why is there a gap? What can be done to make this gap disappear? Sophia, is there a gender pay gap in global journalism?
Yes, there is a persistent gender pay gap in global journalism, where female journalists earn less.
What is the current gender pay gap in journalism, and how does it compare to other industries?
Women in journalism are routinely paid less than their male counterparts. Although the gender pay gap is close to 20% worldwide, though journalism has a pay gap and is reviewed as smaller than industries like finance, insurance, professional services, and healthcare, where women frequently earn significantly less than men in certain roles. The gap is noticeable in high-level positions that require long hours and demanding work cultures. The gender pay gap in Brazil was 19.4% according to the country's first salary transparency report. Income equality is still a long way off in Brazil.
How does the salary debate differ between male and female journalists?
A continuous gender pay gap is highlighted by when they have the same job titles and experience levels. This difference is especially in higher level roles like editors and managers. Josie Cox is a female journalist, editor, and professor, and she speaks about fighting for women's financial freedom and salary pay. Josie quotes, "For centuries, women were denied equal access to money and the freedom and power that came with it. She believes she fights for women for a change could happen, but is going to take more a larger women community to change the system."
How can transparency in salary help gender pay gap?
Pay transparency may provide workers with information and evidence that require to negotiate pay rates and provide them with the means to challenge potential pay discrimination. Being transparent can raise awareness about justifying unequal salaries. This could give more women the power to want to speak up with how they are getting paid and what are being involved with their pay. This is New Media Beat. I am Sophia Trinophopoulos. Back to you, Hannah.
Thank you, Sophia. That's all for this week.
Thanks to our co-producers, Gabrielle Gambusa and Janavi Tripathi. Jaden Nunez engineered the show today. My co-host is Hannah Rodriguez. Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Samantha. Today we heard reports from Kelvin Ventura, Ethan Ford, Jaden Nunez, Hannah Rodriguez, Samantha Sock, Sophia Triafidopoulos, and Frank Whiteneck.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed. We'll be right back.